I know there are so many questions going on in our world right now, in our lives right now, and many of them are questions like, when will we get to go back to school? When will we get to go back to work? When will we, you know, be allowed to do this or that? A lot of it is about timing. Some of it is, what will it look like when we come back together? You know, will we be wearing masks? Will we still be socially distanced and so on? So there's a lot stirring for us. And the thing is, most of it can't be answered right now. And so we are continued to be pulled into living in these questions without answers to everything. What we can respond to, though, is what is present for us right now. How are we responding to what is present for us right now? How are we responding to the fact that we can't know all of these answers? So last week I asked you if you would submit some questions, the spiritual questions that you are currently spinning on or maybe occasionally reflecting upon. And so today I'm going to respond to the four people who submitted questions. All four questions are going to be featured today. So I'm thrilled that that worked out that way. And I want to invite you, as you listen to my responses, to consider how you would respond to that question and to consider your own reflections, because you know the greatest insights are within each of us. And so one person's reflection on it might stir or spark something else in you, but leave space for your own responses and maybe even more of your own questions that might come forth through this. So the first question is, how can we process our feelings with so much unknown? How can we process our feelings with so much unknown? And the person who sent the question goes on to say, specifically, how can we process our feelings in a healthy way? And then she describes her own experience of tending to know that there is anxiety present and distracting herself from that anxiety by overeating. So we all have our favorite go-tos that we tend to move toward in order to sometimes distract or buffer or numb. And so this person is mentioning that hers is overeating. But it doesn't really matter what it is that we reach for. It's the same kind of processes, the same kinds of solutions for what the questioner is asking for, healthy coping skills, essentially. So I actually consulted with my partner, Brenly, who you just saw a few moments ago, who's a licensed professional therapist, and she gave me a resource that I want to share with you as a framework for the response to this question. So there's a slide that shows you some work done by Dr. Russ Harris. He's the author of The Happiness Trap. And the full acronym is FACE COVID, but we're just going to focus on the FACE part. And I've adapted it for our use, so I've expanded it a little bit more for our spiritual understanding as well. But the first one, the first step under FACE, the F, is focus on what's in your control. And we're going to go through these in a little bit more detail. The A is acknowledge your thoughts and feelings. The C, he says come back to, I'm going to say connect with your body, and I've also added, and your spirit. And then engage in what you are doing with a sense of presence. So let's go through each one and talk a little bit more through this example. So focusing on what's in our control. One of the things that Dr. Russ Harris expresses is that what we can control, and we all know this, what we can control is our own response to things, right? What we can control. But he specifically talks about how it's easier to have a sense of control over your behaviors than it is worrying about your thoughts and feelings, which is the work that we often go to in New Thought, is the thoughts and feelings. But if we first start with the behaviors, we get a little bit more grounding, we get a little bit more traction toward focusing on what it is that we can control. So, for example, let's take our questioner's tendency and behavior during this time to keep anxiety at bay. So if you're opening the refrigerator door and the cupboards and you're constantly looking for food or often looking for food, stop yourself during that behavior and ask, is my body hungry? Really simple question, right? And then deeper than that, What am I hungering for? What is my soul hungering for? This can really help us in moving along in the process. So the second part of this, acknowledge your feelings and thoughts, is to drop into our gut, right? And to just see what's here, what's present for us right now. So it may be a feeling of anxiety. And if you start to notice and you can name it, oh, anxiety is starting to arise. So if you know that that's kind of a theme right now, which it is for a lot of us, if you know anxiety is there for and available to you and arising and falling for you, then you can back it up a little bit and notice what sensations come with that. What happens in your body when you start to feel anxious? Do you start to breathe more shallow? Do you feel a little bit of tension in your body? As we become more and more connected to what's going on in the wisdom of our body reveals to us what's beginning to happen. And so we can back it up a little bit sooner and begin to feel into that and to see what it is that we are truly needing or, in this case, hungering for right then and there. So it's also helpful always to ask, what story am I telling myself? You know, because that's the thoughts. So the thoughts run through and they tell a story, often a looping story in these situations, especially if we're feeling anxious. So to slow that down and to say, what is this story I'm telling myself? And then after you have noted the story that you're telling yourself, maybe notice too, you know, is it true? Using a little bit of Byron Katie's work, is it true? How do I know that that's true? And so questioning your own storyline helps the story itself that is kind of holding this in place and allowing feelings to rise to slow down a little bit. I noticed that we just have a little fly friend here, so just want to acknowledge that in case you're seeing that too. We had the back door open, so there we go. Now we've got friends. So the C in the face is to, I change it to connect with the body and spirit. His original was come back to the body. So either way, it's grounding in the physical, it's grounding in the body. And breath is a great way to do that. So for our questioner and for those who might be in these questions as well, breath is a great way to find peace, to find presence, to reconnect to all aspects of being, to reconnect to spirit. So breathing, and if, you know, sometimes it's harder to work with breath if we are in a really anxious place. So if that's the case, I would back that up and say ground a little bit more. Maybe, you know, stretch your arms or, you know, move your shoulders and neck and, you know, let yourself just sort of get into the body again, you know, move your fingers, maybe press your fingers together or press your feet against the earth. So you start to feel physically grounded again, and then it might be a little bit easier to then follow your breath again and just take a few deep breaths. It doesn't have to be a long period of time. It could be one breath. But that one breath, that one conscious breath, breathed in, and then when we breathe out, like a nice big sigh, just, you know, big exhale. That alone can just open us back up into the spaciousness, the presence, the calm, the peace that is available to us. So connecting with the body and spirit. And as we connect then with the presence and with spirit, you might even find speaking some soothing truth to yourself would be helpful. Something like, all is right in this moment and well, everything's okay right now. Or, I'm safe. In this moment, I am completely safe. And so I know and have everything I need right now. Those kinds of affirmative statements can also really help ground our thoughts, our feel, like every aspect of being sort of comes together when we speak those kinds of truths, and we can really feel them then in our bodies and in our emotions. So you can start to feel that sort of higher tension begin to melt away as you take each of these steps of face. The last one is to engage, and it's specifically to engage in what you're doing. So in other words, again, present moment, what was I doing? You know, you're in the middle of doing something. and then you stop and you, you know, go to the fridge and you're having all this anxious feelings. And so it's getting back to then, what was the activity I was in the midst of or I was about to do? And to return to that with a sense of real presence. To do that, you can, Dr. Harris suggests, really bringing in the senses. So take a moment to notice, maybe even name a few things you can see. So looking around, naming a few things you can see, a few things that you're hearing, a few things that you're maybe smelling or tasting. Maybe there's one thing that you're smelling or tasting. But just to begin to use our senses also helps us ground in the present, you know. It's so interesting because so often we have thought about the sensory and the physical experience. We've been taught over the years that the sensory and the physical experience and the spiritual experience are somehow two very different experiences, that, you know, they have these very hard-line categories. But the truth is that it's all one, right? And so when we use what's available to us, we can feel the presence that is here. And so by using our senses, the grounding in the body, the breath, we begin to relax and to allow. And then that presence can be there moving through us in a conscious way. So I found this acronym and this framework really helpful, FACE, for this particular question. Another thing that we can do to feed ourselves during this time is feed ourselves, literally spiritual food. So services like this or other podcasts, maybe spiritual music, uplifting music, different ways that we can feed our mind and our body with good things that allow us to stay in a more positive vibration. So we're going to move right to one of those experiences right now. This is another song by Narayan and Janet. It's called Love Breeze Through Me.
Breathes through everyone and breathes through me. Love breathes through me. Love breathes through me. Love breathes through everyone and breathes through me. I breathe the earth, the sun, the skies, and then the night, your starry eyes. Draws my gaze within and gently flows outside again. The breath of love that we live in. Love breathes to me. Love breathes to me. Love breathes to everyone and breathes to me. And when the too much for me, and all my fears feel unrelieved, I feel peace in air I breathe. The temple bells, the oceans roar, our spirits with each other soar. The God of love comes back for more. I am divine, I know it. I am pure love, I know it. Because God breathes love into me. We are of love's creation. Our breath is love's elation. Love is all that we can be. Love breathes to me. Love breathes through me. Love breathes through everyone and breathes through me. Love breathes through me.
love breathes through me. I've been singing that all week since I heard that song, and I hope you will carry that with you as well. There's a quote by Pema Chodron that feels so appropriate for our last question and actually the next one. Place the fearful mind in the cradle of loving kindness. And just somehow having that word cradle of loving kindness feels really inviting to me. So maybe that will be helpful to those who are holding a similar question. So here's another one that has some similar feel to it. I want to feel open and joyful and happy to help out in love and honor of others and myself. But how can I do that when I feel trapped and blocked and tangled in a stringy mess of negative self-talk, to-dos, and physical clutter? Simple answer, you can't. We can't hold those two things at the same time, feeling joyful and happy and all the things that many of us want to have happen, helping out in love and feeling that sense of service and flow when we feel tangled and trapped and blocked. So let's go with what's real and what's here, right? So if we feel tangled and trapped and blocked, that's where we are. And so to enter into that, and to allow ourselves to recognize that, you know, that trap door, it opens from the inside out. It's like you're in it already. So it opens from the inside out. So there's no use fighting what is here. That's where we are. So a bit of it is to, you know, this questioner has really identified the very specific things that are going on. So it doesn't take a lot of exploration to recognize what's present right now. So let's be with what's present right now, knowing that at some point we like to open that trap door and emerge into the light of joy and love and happiness and all the other things that were claimed. So I would really encourage us, if we're feeling any of these kinds of things, to explore it like it's like a child who has come upon a secret cellar with a secret trap door. You know how exciting that would be to stumble upon something like that? I mean, scary? Yeah, probably, maybe a little bit of that, but that kind of scary, fun thing. And so explore in there. You know, you've already named what's in there, so just flip the light on and take a real look at it. So there's to-do lists, and there's physical clutter, and there's a lot of negative self-talk going on. So I would invite us to explore in that environment, just really to like begin to pick those things up and turn them over, and just sort of with a curiosity, like you're on a treasure hunt, finding old things in the cellar that you didn't know were there. And then to take that after you're done exploring for a while, maybe clear off a little space and to sit down and to write down every positive characteristic or spiritual quality that you know that you have, and make it a really long list. Like when you think you are done, write some more. Just write and write and write every positive quality, every positive trait about yourself that you can think of, every spiritual way of being that really feeds. You don't have to think about it a lot, just whatever comes to mind. And so when you have that exhaustive list, I would invite you then to pick an area of the cellar that you want to declutter. So it might be that in your home, for example, it might be a small drawer or a pile of papers. And whether you decide that you're going to lovingly release with gratitude that item or you're going to keep it, take each item and every time you touch an item, name one of those positive characteristics of yourself. So when you are done with that particular activity, what has happened is you have done something, you have accomplished something, but in the midst of it, you're shifting that negative self-talk, which is the key here, right? So you're shifting that negative self-talk to an uplifted feeling, a truth that you're speaking over and over again. And in the midst of that, you're accomplishing, you're decluttering, you're letting go of the physical things. The reason why I particularly suggest this from the person who asked this question and anybody else who's action-oriented is because a doer needs to do. And so it doesn't, you know, people who are really action-oriented sometimes have a little more trouble with resting in silence, you know, so in the way that we might normally meditate, and that's fine. So do it as an active practice. Then you get to accomplish something, you get to declutter, and in the midst of that, you are shifting, transforming the very fabric, or maybe it's not the fabric, but the loop anyway that's going on inside of your mind, and it becomes a foundational shift. So I invite you to try that out and see what happens for you. And that's really about honoring your own style. So if you're an action person, try this. And see what happens for you. This whole question reminded me of the whole process of decluttering, which I know a lot of people are doing, including my sister, who keeps sending me pictures of things that she finds from a long time ago. One of them she sent this week was an email I sent her, a printed out email from 2007 that had this reading on it that is so appropriate for our times. I wanted to share it with you. So as we declutter physically and emotionally, we might actually run into this contagion, and it's called inner peace. The title is Symptoms of Inner Peace, and it's by a registered nurse, Saskia Davis. She says, be on the lookout for symptoms of inner peace. The heart of a great many already have been exposed. And it is possible that people everywhere could come down with it in epidemic proportions. This could pose a serious threat to what up to now has been a fairly stable condition of conflict in the world. Here are the signs and symptoms of inner peace. A tendency to think and act spontaneously rather than on fears based on past experiences. An unmistakable ability to enjoy each moment. A loss of interest in judging other people. A loss of interest in judging yourself. A loss of interest in interpreting the actions of others. A loss of interest in conflict. A loss of ability to worry. Frequent overwhelming episodes of appreciation. Contented feelings of connectedness with others and with nature. Frequent attacks of smiling. An increasing tendency to let things happen rather than to make them happen. An increased susceptibility to love extended by others, and the uncontrollable urge to extend it. I hope we all catch this. The warning is, if you have some of the above symptoms, be advised that your condition of inner peace may be too far advanced to be curable. If you are exposed to anyone exhibiting any of these symptoms, remain exposed only at your own risk. So just a little fun for you there on these symptoms of inner peace that maybe many of us are running into. I hope so. So our third question is about grief. The questioner says, this virus deeply affects the lungs, and in Chinese medicine, the lungs represent grief. So she says, what are some ways to support and strengthen our and my walk into grief? She said, I would so appreciate the opportunity to do this with my spiritual community. So immediately what popped into my mind when I heard this question, so I'm just going to go with it, is a time when my niece Natalie was, I was babysitting her, and she put her body between a piece of furniture, like a table and the couch. And then she called me over, she said, Auntie Chrissy, I'm stuck. And I was a little perplexed as to why she put herself in that position to tell me that. But I realized then that she was reenacting a movie that she had seen where Pooh Bear gets stuck. And Natalie doing that reminded me of two things that are really important in the grief process. One is that it's that physicality again. So she was enacting it physically, and when we move physically, we can move what gets lodged in the body. So this person is saying that they are tending, like some of the others, tending to put at bay this grief and wants some support to walk into it, knowing that walking into it would be most effective. So I think it's interesting that they actually wrote the question this way, to walk into their grief. So often our questions and the language that we use will actually point to the answer right in the question. So if you chose that phrasing to walk into it, I think there might be a call to move, to walk, to express physically. So whatever is in there that sort of stuck for us can be dislodged and can move out or move through us and be felt through us. So whatever that is for you, dancing, walking, hiking, and certainly if we go hiking, then we have a little bit more of nature and that soft landing of nature to hold us in our grief, and Mother Nature to hold us in our grief. So that might really appeal to you. But whatever it is, movement and physicality, I think, is a big piece of this in getting things going. Another thing that Natalie did was she asked to be witnessed. So she was asking me to witness the experience of being stuck and you know, dramatizing the feeling of being stuck. And so that witnessing is so key for grief. You know, I think we move through our grief so much more fully and effectively when we can have a loving witness to our grief. So I would suggest to the person who's putting this question out and to anybody else who's relating to it, which I think is a lot of us. Another thing I appreciate about these questions is they're broad and really appealing, I think, to a lot of us, is to gather one or two friends that can be a holding space and a listening space so that you can listen to one another from your hearts and speak from your hearts, taking turns, and allowing space for tears and emotion to arise and to be felt and experienced. I think being together in this is unique right now too, because we're all going through the same things. I mean, we're going through them differently, but we have the same basic condition happening all around our world. And so there's a lot of relatable feelings right now. There's a lot of unprocessed grief happening right now that has been really stockpiled for a very long time. But there, you know, it's rising up. It's rising to the surface. And so what a beautiful gift you will give yourself and one or two other friends if you can gather together with that intention to really just speak and listen with your hearts and give space for emotions to arise and to be felt and expressed. And of course, spirit is always our witness. The divine stands as our witness always. And so sometimes it helps. Sometimes I do this. I will speak my prayers and my feelings out loud, like talk to God as if it's there listening, you know, because it is, right? That ever-present spaciousness is there. And if you need to put sort of a being on that to make it warmer, you know, God is a best friend, or God is a mother, or God is a father, whatever it is that works for you. Maybe you have a statue of like Kuan Yin or Mary or something like that, and it helps to just sort of speak there, or speak to a tree in nature, to have something to speak to, tell your dog or your cat. But let the divine be the witness through that processing or that speaking out loud. So I think that can be also really helpful. And again, a kind of sense of bearing witness to. All of a sudden what popped into my head, and I'm just going to share it because it's just a clear visual, is the movie that Tom Hanks was in, and when he had the volleyball and he named it Wilson. And then it became his witness, and he needed that for his sanity. And so he made it seem like a person, and he used that as his witness. So that was a really powerful process, I think, to express and sometimes what we need, and witness is a big part of grief, I think. So those are a few ideas for what you can do with grief. And because of your question, and because you are not alone, we will schedule a workshop on grief to help you process with your spiritual community. I think it's a great idea, and I'm glad you brought the question up. So finally, our last question is, what is this coronavirus period teaching us? We've really been talking about this week by week by week, but I greatly appreciate the question because I think it's important to keep rolling it around, reflecting on it, and extracting from it what we can as the next or peace for us, the next piece of inquiry for us, and then eventually actions and implementation that we want to have grow out of it. So for me, I really am tuning into that what this coronavirus is teaching us is about what is essential. You think about how everything is phrased, right? That's what we've been talking about. What is essential? What is essential to keep open? And so it's important time then to release what is not essential. What we realize here is that we've got a whole lot of stuff and ways of being and ways of operating that maybe aren't so essential. And we get to see that now in real time as entire societies, in fact, as an entire world, we get to behold that in real time and to feel and to notice the effects of what it's like to strip away what is not essential and to only allow what is to be here present with us is what is essential. So what is essential? I mean, obviously food and water, clean food and clean water and clean air and health and connection. And connection can be emotional connection, spiritual connection, but we need that. We need each other. We need social interaction and we need a sense of a connection to something. Well, for us who are on a spiritual journey, I think a lot of us need and want and see and believe in something that is greater than us and that moves through us and has great potential for us. So in the non-essential part of our lives is the sort of more, faster, better way of life. You know, that idea that this is the way life works and we get so used to it that this is our go-to and that we all think that it's a status quo and so this is it. This is how we work. It's more, faster, better, more, faster, better, more, faster, better. You know, whatever is convenient and disposable because it's more, faster, and better. So we realize now, and we have been realizing for a while, but we have this giant wake-up call now to say, huh, what if what would be better is slower and truer, less and truer and slower, instead of more, faster, better, less and truer and slower. And when we ratchet that pace down, and then again, now we look at what is essential. And when we look at what is essential, we see essential processes, essential work, food supply, farmers, healthcare. How can we prioritize those things that are essential to our fulfillment in life? I think that process is what the coronavirus is really teaching us as a society. And then we all have our personal response to that, our personal ways that we can shift our own lives to keep asking that question, what is essential and what is not essential? What am I letting go of? What am I shedding so that I can have more of what is essential? Much like question two, as I shed the negative self-talk, the clutter, the endless to-dos, then I might be able to experience now what it is that I wanted to experience all along, the happiness, the joy, the love, the sense of service and honor. So contemplating what is essential is going to really feed us, I think, for a very long time. And so I encourage you to do that, to allow us to look at that so that we can clarify what our next actions are. Overall, with all of these questions, to keep living in the questions, to keep asking the questions, and allow ourselves to reflect with each other and on our own and in our times of meditation and prayer, all while we're out for walks, all of this can be really, really good work for us to be doing right now. And while we do it, we can do it with a kind of compassionate abiding, as Pema Chodron phrases it. She uses this term as a compassionate abiding within us, a compassionate abiding for one another. It's a very gentle and invitational, I think, idea. And it's that compassionate abiding in this present, in what is present, what is here and now. So that's an invitation I really want to bring us into, is to continue to be in the questions of life, but do it with a sense of compassion for self, for others, for all of us in this boat together, in this storm together. As somebody said, we're all in this storm together. We've got different boats. We're well aware of that. We're well aware that some of us have more secure boats than others. And I think this is part of the essential work too, to recognize that, you know, the world wasn't working for everyone. And it started to not really work for anyone. And so now we have another chance to reboot, so to speak, so that we all have nice sturdy boats. And then when the storm comes, it's a lot easier to sail. So let's do that with compassionate abiding. Let's do that with a sense of the presence. I invite you to close out with me with this affirmation. I compassionately abide in this present moment. I compassionately abide in this present moment. So it is. Bless you. Thanks for the questions.